The Israel Report with Rolene Marks for the latest information and the stories behind the news.
Rolene Marks, how are you?
Good, thanks. And you, Howard? And apropos all the balagan the last couple of days, I just say to you, continue to speak your truth and spark important conversation.
Well, it's interesting you say that because a few people have actually asked me, Do I regret writing that article that I wrote? Because the reaction was largely negative. And yes, there was a fair amount. There was some support. And certainly from our listeners, there was quite a lot of support. But the majority of the reaction was incredibly negative. The truth is, no, I don't regret it for 1 minute. I think it's important and to even more so, in fact, because of the aggression of the response, that makes me think that it's more important to write and to debate these issues. And if we aren't mature enough and if we aren't adult enough and smart enough to debate these issues, I think we're going to land up with our country and our world being in a lot of trouble.
I agree with you. I think it's very important in many aspects, and even including around Israel, it's very important to have the uncomfortable conversations. And kol hakavod to you, not just on your op-ed on News 24, but also in the Times of Israel, where you expose some of the abuse and some of the treatment that you have received. It is so important. I know that sometimes, especially when it comes to speaking about Israel, we don't want to shine a light on anything negative, but Israel is our country. Israel is a democracy. We are Zionists, and I think it's important to have these difficult conversations, to allow for people to ask uncomfortable questions so that we can always learn and improve.
Yeah, and I think the further challenge is the fact that my profile picture, let's say on News 24, where I'm not only writing about Jewish and Israel issues, I'm writing about various socio-political concerns that I might have. The fact that people immediately resort to the Jewish issue is quite interesting, because that means I'm boxed and I'm limited by the kippah that is on my head. And strange enough, I mean, I made that comment in my Times of Israel article where someone says your little hat is too tight, so you know it stops you thinking. But that actually summed it up quite interesting. And to some extent, he's right. The fact that I'm wearing a kippah and the fact that I wear a yarmulke and I do that does unfortunately sometimes limit the way that people view me. It's a fascinating but quite sobering thought.
Well, I think continue to rock a fabulous kippah.
Thank you. And certainly,
wear it with pride and stand
do.
Tall. But also,
okay, that I don't
it,
do. I'm
it
not so tall, but all right.
What yeah. we have known for centuries, and that whenever the temperatures rise in the world around political debate or around situations, Jews will always be scapegoats. They will, you know,
yes.
I don't know who it was who coined the term the eternal Jew. But whether it is we are being marked as scapegoats because we wear a kippot or a Magen David, or because or it's the state of Israel, which is our homeland, our brand, our representative, that is the scapegoat. It's you can always see whenever things are difficult around the world, even if we look throughout history, there is a big swing back to anti-Semitism.
Well,
and I
yeah.
think exactly what you have said, there are major issues in South Africa, major issues. And it just goes to show that you aren't being dealt with or treated or responded to like a South African citizen, regardless of race, creed, religion, gender, whatever, but because of the kippah on your head. And I say, everyone who can wear a kippah, rock a kippah in solidarity with Howard. Maybe you want to wear a black one, maybe you don't.
Yeah, I mean, look, I never thought I would start that type of a movement in my life, but I hear you. The one concern, actually, the biggest concern through all of this was a reaction by a Jewish reader who said, you are the reason there's anti-Semitism in the world. And I thought that is so sad a statement, because really what he's saying is that we don't deserve to have an opinion outside of the Jewish world just in case we are persecuted. And it's almost as though he's internalized his own and the view of anti-Semitism to such an extent that he can't see beyond that. That was a comment actually that upset me the most.
I can see why. You know, I once posted, as I do for all religious holidays, and because I do have many Muslim friends, wishing my Muslim friends Eid Mubarak, and I was called a closeted Muslim sympathizer. And I also found that I found that very, very sad, because I think that as Jews or as Zionists, we can be pro-Palestinian. It doesn't mean that we are anti-Israel. 100%. I think that as Jews, we can have opinions. We should have opinions about the countries that we live in, because I think it is always part of the Jewish nature to bring tikkun olam. That is part of our tenet. And I think it is okay to criticize Israeli policies. But the line is definitely drawn. I mean, before I start with the hate mail now,
well, in fact,
the line is definitely drawn when it calls into question the legitimization of the existence of a Jewish state.
Absolutely. In fact, one of your favorite listeners, Jenny, saying Jews need to drop the victim narrative. Remember why we were created, and that is to get on with fixing of the world. So very much back to the concept that you were just referring to of tikkun olam.
Hell yeah, Jenny, I agree with you. And before we carry on, to quote one of my favorite Jews, and she's a motivational speaker, her name is Gabrielle Bernstein, she says, don't be the victim, be the lighthouse. So I agree with Jenny. Let's be lighthouses, especially on dark days like today, where once again we have to extend our solidarity and our profound condolences with the people of New York City, people of Manhattan, for yet another horrendous terror attack, and the kind of which we know all too well here in the state of Israel.
All right. So bring us up to speed. We were meant to actually talk with David Efion of the El Gemeinde. We had some technical issues. We couldn't get hold of him. So give us an update as to what we know about this terror attack.
Well, what we do know is a terrorist by the name of Saifullah Saipov, who was originally from Uzbekistan, drove a Home Depot truck through Lower Manhattan on a bike lane, killing eight, mostly tourists, in an ISIS-inspired terror attack. And basically what happened was that he drove about more than a kilometer or so, causing many injuries, killing eight, and he had rented this white pickup truck. He hopped the curve at West Houston, I think they call it Houston in New York, and he shouted out Allahu Akbar, and eventually he got out the truck and ran onto the highway, and was shot by a cop who shot him in the abdomen and ended what could have been a more deadly assault. And witnesses have said that they have found security authorities have said that they have found a note that was written by Saipov in Arabic, and it was discovered outside the vehicle that he had rented. And apparently, more victims, including two school kids whose bus was struck by this Home Depot truck, were injured in what the authorities in New York City are describing as the deadliest New York City terror attack since 9/11.
Really, really a terrible situation. Let me just ask you a question, because I've been a bit confused by some of the reports and concerns that I've been reading about during the course of today. One of the comments was a criticism of CNN for reporting that the terrorist screamed, God is great, in Arabic. And they were taken to task by a fair amount of conservative writers for that reporting, by not saying that he called Allahu Akbar. What am I missing here? Why is that? Maybe you don't agree, or maybe you don't understand it either, but do you get why that is a concern? I even read it, I think, on Honest Reporting, who were very uncomfortable with that. What am I missing?
Well, funny you should mention that, because one of the resources that I used to compile my report today was the New York Daily News. Mm-hmm. And the New York Daily News is not known to pull punches. And they also said, he said, God is great. I don't know if it is a fear of being accused of Islamophobia. I don't know if it is perhaps boxing themselves into the same box that former President Barack Obama was in, where he wouldn't use the terminology terror attack or Islamic terror attack. I don't know if they are scared that they will face some kind of retribution from the Muslim community, and I don't know whether or not it's become a case of, well, we won't pander. We won't pander to ISIS by allowing their catchphrase, or these Islamic terror groups, to allow their catchphrase, Allahu Akbar, any more coverage. So I also found that curious. This is the first kind of trend of this that I'm seeing.
Right. So it's the first time we've seen the trend, and it's the first time we've seen criticism of it, obviously. But I can't say I fully understand it. I'd love to hear from our listeners. Is that a problem for you? Do you find that is some form of a dishonest reporting to report it that way? I'm not sure that I get it. In fact, I can tell you I don't get it. And I read the reports, and these are by people that I value. You know, when I look at honest reporting, these are people I hold in high regard. And I just don't really understand what the concern is. 0618951019 or 34519. What's the reaction been like across the United States and of course in New York?
Well, understandably, people are hurting. People are very, very traumatized by this. A lot of Pray for New York. Our Heart New York City being shared on social media. A lot of people are feeling, very, very vulnerable, especially in that we're talking about this very, very soon after the terror attack in Las Vegas. It wasn't an Islamic terror attack, but still a mass shooting, a very, very frightening event that has happened. We have heard from President Trump, who has said no ISIS in his America, and I think this will again push for a lot of sympathy towards his campaign pledge, which was screening of immigrants who are coming into the United States. I think this has given his supporters or perhaps the more conservative support base more impetus to support a ban on immigration or a more tough vetting of immigrants.
Just before we carry on to move on to another subject, Nikki's saying, I think it's because Allahu Akbar has taken on such a different and ominous meaning. So God is great sounds less menacing. That's from Nikki. But she might well be right. Nikki might well be right. From what I understand, Allahu Akbar, the phrase, is actually used in Muslim prayer throughout the course of the day. So
it is. In fact, if you hear the call to pray, you will hear Allahu Akbar.
Interesting indeed. But Nikki might well be right. Let's just go back to talk to about the tunnel that was blown up. And just to remind our listeners, if you weren't listening yesterday, the tunnel was actually blown up on the Israeli side of the border. This they had already tunneled through from Gaza through onto to the Israel side of the border, and that's where the tunnel was blown up. What do we know about the intention of the terrorists and the reason that the tunnel was being dug?
Well, funny you should mention that, because I was actually speaking to a colleague of mine today who is high-ranking military official in Israel. And I said to him, you know, what is your opinion of this? And he said to me, well, it's no surprise that when the tunnels reach into Israel, that the intentions are not, and he used in inverted commas, commercial. And by commercial, we mean for Hamas receiving money, receiving weapons, etc., that come through the tunnels. Also, what are smuggled through the tunnels, which people may not be aware of. And here I really try and encourage our human and animal rights activists, are animals. Animals are smuggled through the tunnels, as are, and I know that some people are going to laugh at this, but it's actually quite serious, mail order brides.
Ooh,
quite,
really?
Quite terrifying.
But that's not on Amazon. It's not. Amazon aren't delivering through the tunnels.
I'm hoping Amazon are not delivering through the tunnels.
Right.
But 1-800 dollar bride could be delivering through the tunnels. So when these tunnels reach into Israel, you know that the intentions are extremely, extremely nefarious. And it has been made public that the intentions by Islamic Jihad, because it was Islamic Jihad terrorists who were killed in the tunnels, was to possibly kidnap more Israeli soldiers and hold them for ransom for their prisoners.
Quite frightening. The IDF, this is not a great story at all. The IDF is opening an investigation into shooting of Palestinian drivers. Tell me about this.
Well, yesterday there was an incident where a Palestinian driver was killed and another wounded after soldiers opened fire on their vehicle in the West Bank. And the reason for this was that the soldiers who were on duty identified the drivers as driving in a suspicious manner. And this was near the town of Nabi Saleh, which is north of Ramallah. They said that they had flagged the vehicle to stop, and the vehicle did not. And fearing, and you know, and unfortunately, these types of attacks have been commonplace in Israel of late. These car ramming attacks. Unfortunately, they shot at the driver. The driver who was killed was a female, and then somebody in the passenger seat. The driver was killed, and the passenger was a female and was injured. And the driver was Muhammad Musa, who was 26 years old, and his sister Latifa. The Magen David Adom paramedics were called to the incident, and they had earlier called the incident an attempted terror attack. The RDF kind of played it down. They said it's just an event. And the Palestinian Authority's foreign ministry, they've called this extrajudicial execution. And, of course, because things are so tenuous at the moment, and because Israel still is a democracy with all the democratic processes in place, this will undergo investigation by the RDF.
How much training do regular soldiers have? Because their responsibility is quite significant in a situation like this. Whether this was a situation where two unfortunate siblings were shot at because of a misunderstanding, or whether they were indeed about to undertake an attack that is not uncommon in Israel or in that area. Certainly. How much training do they have in order to be able to identify it? Because this must place tremendous, tremendous stress and pressure on soldiers. And it's not difficult to do the wrong thing in that split second.
Of course not. And I think we need to remember that, first of all, our soldiers are very, very, very highly trained. But I think what we need to be very, very sensitive to is that these are split-second decisions that they have to make, and that sometimes there are mistakes.
Right.
And whether or not this was an intentional terror attack or this was a mistake on the part of the RDF, this will be investigated.
And so it should be, you know, when of course the situation with the soldier, and I've just forgotten his name, was it Azaria?
Azaria, yes.
who shot a Palestinian a terrorist, and he was confirmed as a terrorist. He had just undertaken an attack, but he had been disarmed. That process, whether it seems to be unjust or not, the fact that he had to go through a proper court process and was found to be guilty, as uncomfortable as it might be, I have to say is the only way that there can be or there can remain a sense of justice and order in a country that can really spiral out of control if these situations aren't monitored.
No, absolutely, absolutely. It's very, very difficult, and I think our army is also aware of the international pressure that they face, and you know, we don't want to have issues like we've had in the past, like with the Mavi Marmara, where we knew what the intentions were, where we knew what happened on that flotilla was not for humanitarian purposes, and things were premeditated, but we saw the ramifications, the diplomatic fallout, the far-reaching ramifications, the effect that it has on our diaspora communities.
Absolutely.
Because we can't forget that when something happens in Israel, unfortunately, to our great concern and worry, this impacts on our diaspora communities. And you know what it's like when there is a situation in Israel. You know,
absolutely.
I think the worry is twofold. We worry for us here in Israel. We worry especially for our young men and women that we send into battle. And we worry very much so for our diaspora community.
Well, it's actually interesting. SMS from Danny. And Danny, thank you for your positive support that you sent in a little bit earlier. But I want to just raise, because we've only got less than a minute to do so, why do we Jews or Israel find ourselves explaining to others? Why do we even bother? And I'm going to answer that question, and I think we do it for ourselves. We're not explaining to others. I think it's important that that the integrity and morality of the Israeli army and anybody functioning within Israel remains intact and of the highest standard. It's not about explaining it to anybody else. It's really about ourselves. What Raleen is referring to is the fact that if it isn't, if there isn't concern for what the rest of the world feels, well, then communities around the world will suffer for those consequences, and that's why it's important. But I don't believe it's a justification. It's a high moral standard for the sake of that. It is 6 o'clock, Raleen. I do have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we will be back with you tomorrow. That is the Israel Report, brought to you by the Blue Agency. We're out of here. We'll be back tomorrow. Ready? They are standing outside the studio.